This podcast is a proud member of the That Moment In Podcast Network. Check out the network at thatmomentin.com.
Okay, and welcome back to our weekly edition of Cinema Recap. We've got your co-hosts, John Bonham, and I'm joined by Mark Jackson. And I think moving forward, Mark, it sounds like it's going to be you and myself, and then we'll have Vern join in if he's got any big news to talk about or movie reviews that he wants to do. But yeah, I think we'll go ahead and jump right into things here. Mark, we've got some significant news that was released over the past week. I think the first one we should probably just kick off is you were just telling me about the Die Hard prequel that you heard some news about.
Yeah. I had read a little bit on Screen Rant. That's news unbeknownst to me that they're coming with the new sixth Die Hard movie, and the working title was actually Die Hard Year One. Since then, they've retitled it to be McClane. If you guys know anything about the Die Hards, you know, the first one really ushered in kind of a new action hero era where he had like the everyman who was able to take on everything, but he didn't feel like some, you know, cartoonish character. So it really did lay down the groundwork for a lot of different action movies moving forward. But since then, the Die Hard movies have not exactly gotten completely worse, but the second one was all right. The third one was pretty good with Samuel L. Jackson. Fourth one was okay. I think that was Live Free to Die Hard. And the last one, was it A Good Day to Die Hard? That I feel like almost killed the franchise.
I think that really tanked it. And I think at that point, everybody was like, all right, we can't have Bruce Willis do another Die Hard movie.
Yeah, so hearing this news is pretty surprising to me. But obviously, you know, Hollywood's going to go ahead and try to make money any way they can. So the working synopsis on this is that they're kind of doing it in the past, but also carrying it into the present. So I think one guy is actually going to play younger John McClane while Willis is playing himself in present day.
He's coming back again?
He's coming back again, which if you've seen any of his recent movies of late, he does a lot of phoning in. So I don't know if maybe he's like pivoting back to kind of the chops and the gravitas he had before, but he is coming back. They say they can't do a Die Hard movie without Willis.
Well, I'm going to keep my fingers crossed that they do a very nice casting for whoever's playing younger John McClane, because I've had plenty of Bruce Willis playing that part. So it's time to freshen it up a little bit.
I'm with you, man. I'm with you.
Another piece of news. We got to give an RIP to Hollywood icon, Burt Reynolds, who passed away over the last week. I mean, you know, one of the biggest names in Hollywood. I think he really came to fame during his the controversial classic Deliverance alongside John Voight. And from there, you know, he I think probably his most iconic role was Smokey and the Bandit and creating that little franchise. You know, he was Oscar nominated for, he got his sole Oscar nomination, that is, for Boogie Nights. Mark, any personal favorites from Burt Reynolds?
Yeah, for me, you know, it's got to be him in The Longest Yard, 1974, Paw Wrecking Crew, the disgraced
NFL. Damn it, that was mine too.
The disgraced NFL quarterback who, you know, has to go into prison and really kind of find himself amongst all the convicts and the dredges of society. And, you know, really goes through a lot of character change. So for me, that's his most iconic role. It sounds like for you, it probably is too. I know he did Smokey and the Bandit, but there's something about The Longest Yard I would pretty much put in like my top five favorite football movies ever.
Yeah, it's an awesome movie. I think it combines, you know, like the drama and realism of prison life, along with, you know, some nice comical aspects that they mixed in, so it didn't get too serious and dreary. He kills it in the main role. He's awesome as the leader of the team. And it was just one of those moments that I had with my dad. You know, he had me watch the movie with him when I was younger, and it just, you know, it's forever going to be one of those father-son moments that I have. So big shout out to Burt Reynolds for that, and, you know, certainly RIP.
Yeah, it's funny you say that. You watched with your dad too, because I remember I was like 15 or 14 when the new Longest Yard with Ab Sadler came out. My dad's like, you really need to watch the old one before you even get to the new one. So we watched it together when I was about 14, and I was just blown away. And it's kind of funny because, you know, he made his name being not an NFL quarterback, but a college quarterback. So he brought a lot of authenticity to the role.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, sometimes other people who are playing sports stars or quarterbacks kind of just don't, cannot bring. So, I mean, him kind of hopping in, I legitimately felt like he had the tools to, at one point, be like a top quarterback. And obviously in that movie, he was in The Longest Yard. So, yeah, it's just he was a movie star in every single aspect of the phrase.
Yeah, it drives me nuts in sports movies where the lead actor doesn't, you know, they can't throw a baseball, right? Or, you know, they can't throw a football, and it just doesn't look, you know, they don't look the part. And that definitely wasn't the case with Burt Reynolds in The Longest Yard.
Right.
So moving on, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the newest Oscar award category that they added for popular movie. And just like that, there's a lot of kickback from Hollywood, and it's already been removed. So I think we were kind of on the fence. Like, it seemed, you know, as if it was they're doing it to, you know, appease people and try to draw a bigger audience, and almost like a patronizing move. So, Mark, what are your thoughts on it being gone already?
You know, ultimately, I say good riddance.
Yeah.
It's one of those things where, you know, I don't think a lot of people are necessarily clamoring for it, for better or worse. You know, I think the Oscars does have its structure, and I don't think a lot needs to be changed necessarily, aside from just keeping the show a little shorter, maybe, you know, speeding up a little bit. But I don't think anyone was necessarily complaining about, you know, the actual categories or whatnot. I've heard compelling thoughts as to maybe we should have like best comedy or best sci-fi. I would maybe be a little more open to that. But when you kind of slap the name best popular movie on there, it does denote and connotate certain things that I just think aren't necessarily needed for the Oscars. And I really do think the death knell for the award was Black Panther coming out and saying, you know, we're not going to submit ourselves for, you know, best popular film. Like, we've got a really good to great film here. We're going to, you know, give it our best run for best picture. So I think once they did that, you know, it kind of signaled to the Oscars, this is probably not a good idea.
Yeah, totally. When the movies that, you know, you think would be in this category are, you know, it's an insulting move to them when they're like, no, we want the, you know, the main best picture award, then I think they lose all credence. And when I read it again, I was like, man, most popular movie, it sounds like an MTV Movie Awards category.
Right.
So I think it's the smart move. And the last piece of news is a last second scene cut from The Predator, which is getting released this week. But just for a little backstory for those who don't know, Olivia Munn learned that one of the cast members who was given a cameo role because he was friends with Shane Black, he had a scene, you know, with Munn, and she found out that he was actually a sexual predator, convicted on two charges of, I think, like trying to proposition or solicit a teenager via email. So she alerted Fox, and his scenes were removed. So first and foremost, you know, kudos to Olivia Munn for going to the studio to, you know, get this guy removed from the movie.
Absolutely.
And what was Shane Black thinking in the midst of all this? I mean, Kevin Spacey, you know, one of the biggest actors in Hollywood, was removed from an entire movie weeks before it was released. I don't know what Shane Black was trying to pull here, but like, it's going to blow up in your face.
Yeah. I mean, I can't, you know, agree more with you. And really just reading the scene about, like you described a little bit, but his character essentially hitting on her many times throughout the movie. And if this guy is doing this stuff in real life, it just comes off as completely tone deaf. And, you know, if you, I'm not, you know, rationalizing putting this guy in there, but if you were going to do that, like, wouldn't you think you would maybe do the 180 and, you know, just paint him as like a, I don't know, a complete geek or something, but everything about the scene and having him in there just reads as like completely tone deaf. So I like Shane Black. I mean, I think he's done some really good stuff. Nice Guy is one of my favorite movies of 2015. Yeah. But, you know, I just don't get this at all. Like, why he would have that particular scene with that, you know, build up in that scene in there.
Yeah, I'm a big Shane Black fan. I love his writing, going from, you know, Lethal Weapon, Kiss Kiss Bang Bang, Nice Guys. And for him to do this, it just seems like a sketchy move, and that he's trying to slide something past the studio. So yeah. I don't know what he was thinking, but again, kudos to Munn for, you know, making the call out.
Absolutely, absolutely.
All right, we'll dive into the top five for the previous week. I got to give a quick shout out. Mission Impossible Fallout is officially out of the top five. It's number six this week with 3.8 million, but it had a great run, movie of the summer, and yep. Mission Impossible, you'll be missed in the top five.
Yeah, and Vern, if you're listening, you still need to see that if you haven't seen it yet.
Yeah, gosh, I hope you saw that instead of the Meg, but it sounded like he was leaning in the other direction.
Right.
So at number five, we got Searching with 4.5 million. I know it came out, I believe, last week, but we hadn't seen it yet. And Mark, with that, I'm going to give the floor to you since you checked it out today.
Yeah, I checked it out today. And, you know, I'm just going to throw it out there. It's my favorite movie of the year at this point. I know, you know, getting into this pod a little later, we might give our thoughts as the best and worst, but my initial takeaway is it had me riveted from really beginning to end. And, you know, I think everyone kind of knows if you have seen it or not, it kind of does take a really immersive, you know, experience where everything's happening on screen. So you immediately start thinking of Unfriended and Unfriended Dark Web and whatnot.
Right.
But it really, I wouldn't really even call it a gimmick. With those films, it felt a little gimmick-ish at times, but with this movie, it definitely played into the whole storytelling and just the story beats of the movie. It had me gripped from beginning to end. I would say it's got a little bit of Unfriended, but it really has a lot of Prisoners, if you've seen that movie from 2013 with Denis Villeneuve. You know, the guy is trying to find his daughter. Something happens, and it's really just a race against time to, find her, you know, before the worst happens. And everyone knows, you know, the longer it goes, the likelihood is she's probably not alive. So there's just a perpetual sense of urgency throughout the entire movie. And kind of just seeing this unravel, hopping to from Skype to Facebook to this thing called like Ustream. But it's very, very immersive. I highly recommend anyone who hasn't seen it yet to this point, go ahead and see it. I don't think that you will regret it if you go ahead and see it. So that's my recommendation.
Man, and that's impressive, because like you said, when you see those movies like Unfriended and, you know, and that's what I thought when I first saw Searching. It was like a gimmicky, catered to, you know, like young teenagers or millennials type movie. And when you're putting things in the realm of Villeneuve in his movie Prisoners, I mean, he's my favorite director in the game right now. Yeah. That guy's amazing. So with that, I need to see Searching. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. I mean, it's a career best for Trill right now, performance wise. You know, he's come a long way from Harold and Kumar to White Castle. Even just, you know, his last couple of years, he's a really good Zulu in Star Trek, but I mean, he completely kills it from moment one. And I kind of thought about Up when I saw this movie, because if you go ahead and see the movie, it gets really, really touching with like a montage for the first couple minutes. I don't want to spoil anything, but you know, it really does set the tone and set the emotional heart of the entire movie within like 4 to 5 minutes. So just rambling on here, but highly recommend it.
Hey, well, there you have it. Favorite movie of the year so far for Mark. So I think it's going to have to be a must-see for people. At the number four spot with 6 million, we've got The Meg. You know, we've talked about this for the past 2 weeks now. It's a ridiculous summer blockbuster about a giant shark. It's got Jason Statham in it, so, you know, you're going to get your fill of action. Fun movie. I don't really have too much else to add about it. Anything on your end, Mark?
About the same. I think we are both in the same wavelength as to what we felt. There's some fun, especially as it goes deeper into the runtime. But I'd say overall, I think it wouldn't be wrong to say both of us came away a little bit disappointed. There was kind of a weird, you know, disconnect with tones there. So it still is it's an okay summer blockbuster. We're obviously not in summer anymore, but I think it's staying on the top five as evidence people want to see some dumb entertainment, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, we all need that every once in a while, no doubt about it. So moving on to number three, we got another movie that you reviewed for us with Peppermint, bringing in $13.2 million. Going into this, I was expecting a kind of a female Punisher movie. So, Mark, what were your thoughts?
You're kind of on the nose with the female Punisher movie. You know, think that plus a little bit of Death Wish came out earlier this year, a remake of Charles Bronson's movies in the 1970-ish decade. But yeah, you hit it basically on the nose. I kind of came in, we talked a little bit about it last week. I had tempered expectations. I wasn't expecting anything to set the world on fire, but I was like, if we can get a little bit of maybe a female John Wick Punisher-esque movie, you know, in the Taken vein, it's directed by, I think it's Pierre Morel, the guy who did the first Taken. So, you know, it's got some potential there. Overall, I'd say it's pretty average. You know, Jennifer Garner is really good in it. I didn't have any doubts that she couldn't pull this off because she's done it years over years before with Alias. So she kind of fits right into that meat of what that role asked. But the writing around her and the story around her is not so strong. You kind of know what you're getting when you hop into the movie. The thing with the movie, though, with some of these revenge movies is we like them because they're really simplistic. Like, you know, something happens to character A, they've got to get revenge on character B to feel fulfilled. And that's fine. I think, though, with a lot of these revenge movies, though, a lot of them work better than others because we really get an idea of, like, who these characters are. I mean, with John Wick, it took place in a kind of a mythological world that's still in ours, but you know, you've got the Continental and you got all that backstory. So it was really easy for us to kind of buy John Wick as this, AAA hitman who is the best of the best of what he does. Same with kind of the Equalizer and whatnot. They kind of hit enough on these guys' psyche. So you buy them into what they do, even if you don't actually see it. With this movie, though, you know, Garner was good, but there isn't really much to show that she has this capability of what she does later into the movie. So, you know, she literally goes away for about 5 years, 10 minutes later in screen time, she resurfaces and she's, you know, getting revenge on the people that did these things for her family. So it is kind of, it is a little bit hard to believe because there's maybe only 10 seconds of us seeing, okay, she went into an MMA cage and she started fighting and whatnot. And, you know, okay, she's got a little bit of skills, but there still is nothing that truly indicates like she's got this capability to take on essentially, you know, these Vatos. I forget, there's like some name for them. They're super big in the U.S., huge gang, but she takes them all out. And there's just not enough there really to say, you know, how can she cultivate all these skills, you know, being away for 5 years, and we don't really see a lot of that.
Yeah, and that's the thing, is in these movies where, you know, normal people become, you know, like crazy assassins or, you know, start taking on the mob or whatnot.
Yeah.
The best part about those movies is when you see how they went from, you know, where they started as maybe like a blue collar or white collar working class citizen and the training that they went through to, you know, garnish all these skills, which, you know, movie Widows coming out in a couple months here. One of the things I'm most excited about is seeing how all these women, you know, when they're going to the shooting range, they're learning about, you know, money laundering or whatever they're going to have to do to, you know, take down the mob in this. That's what I'm most excited to see is just that, you know, that bit of the movie about, you know, the training that they go through to gain this experience. So I feel like, A, you know, that's a great part of a movie that if they skimp on it, that sucks. And then B, you're just not going to buy into it as much because you're like, well, this is just unrealistic.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's the montage scene, the training scene. Sometimes they can be a little cliched, but I think if they're done right, they do add a lot to a lead character, kind of where they're at in their life, what is spurring them to make this change and what is spurring them to ultimately carry out what they need to carry out. So not really having that in this movie, I think, did do a detriment to her name is Riley, Jennifer Garner's character in this movie. There's just not a lot of realistic, there's not like enough realism to show her change from where she starts to kind of what she gets to and how she ends up.
Okay. Yeah, that's a bummer. That could have been a nice part to capitalize on.
Right.
All right. Well, going on to the number two, we've got Crazy Rich Asians, which continue its very nice run. I think it's like 130 or some odd million dollars domestically now, brought in 13.6 million this weekend. And I think it's the first time it's been, I think it had, was it 3 weeks in the number one spot before the Nun just overtook it?
Yeah, 3 weeks. You know, it's really been supporting and running the box office since its release. And, you know, still coming in second, but that's not a bad take for, you know, a movie that is pretty mid-budget. So, you know, I think people have definitely flocked to the good word of mouth that we talked about a little last week. It is a really good movie, you know, and we need more of these type of, you know, diversity focused movies in Hollywood.
Right.
Does it set the world on fire? No, but it's definitely a movie where you can go in, take a date, take your family, and you know, maybe learn a little something, and ultimately come away, you know, with a good time.
Yeah, I think it continues the trend of showing one of the biggest things in 2018 that we've come to learn is the fact that, you know, audiences want a more, you know, diverse set of movies, mm-hmm. and they, you know, hitting on certain cultures. We saw that, you know, Black Panther was a monster success at the box office because it finally catered to that.
Right.
And, you know, hats off to director Ryan Coogler for really nailing it. And here we've got Crazy Rich Asians, obviously not the same scale as Black Panther, but the run of success it's had just, you know, continues that trend.
Absolutely.
All right. And again, that's another one that I thought you posted a review for that moment in, right?
Yeah. I've got it up there. I did it about, I'd say, a week and a half ago. So guys, feel free to read that along with Peppermint. And yeah.
All right. And last but not least, we've got the biggest movie of the weekend with The Nun, which, you know, we both predicted this to be the number one spot. I think it's, you know, not opening up against, you know, any major releases. These type of horror movies, you know, Insidious, Conjuring, Annabelle, they've pretty much dominated when they've opened. It's just, you know, there's a definite want from audiences for this. Having said that, I think you and I predicted this to be in the realm of like 35 to 40 million. And I was kind of stunned when I checked it today. It opened up to 53.5 million.
So. I was stunned also. I think we both kind of said, yeah, 35, 40 is a pretty safe bet. But, you know, when I saw the actual take before we hopped on to do this pod today, I was surprised, too, that it got to 53.5. And right now, I think they're calling it the biggest September release, you know, outside of It, which obviously crashed and set all types of box office records on fire last year. But it's definitely the biggest horror release after It as far as box office takes go. And I think all time. It's second, I think, just all time after It. So I'm honestly surprised. You know, I know you did a review on it. I read it. Very, very solid review there. But yeah, I just wasn't expecting 53.5 million. I know a lot of horrors are usually, you know, front loaded for the weekend, but I wasn't seeing it. Simple as that.
Yeah, and honestly, after you and I made our predictions for what it was going to gross, after that podcast, I Googled Conjuring to see what it had brought in so far in Annabelle, and I was like, oh my gosh, I might have just put my foot in my mouth. And little did I know it was going to open, you know, another like 20%, 25% higher than I was expecting. So positive is, you know, I like these kind of movies, so I like that it shows that the audiences are really yearning for these.
Yeah.
Having said that, you know, I obviously did check it out and review it, and it wasn't what I was hoping for. I think the issue with The Nun was it just didn't really find its voice. When I look at horror movies, I kind of break it down into two different categories. Either I want a movie with a great plot and some nice backstory and great acting and a few scares, you know, throughout, and maybe a twist or turn,
sure.
Like The Sixth Sense, maybe not a full blown scary movie, but a phenomenal film nonetheless. Or I just need a short, you know, hour and 20 minute scare fest. I need, you know, thin plot, but a lot of great jump out action. And I'm totally content with that. But with The Nun, I kind of found it in an awkward middle ground where it would give a little bit of backstory onto a character, but not really develop it. It tried to force a backstory for the demonic, you know, character of The Nun about, you know, being arisen by an evil duke during the Crusades. And then it was, you know, like banished with the blood of Christ. But then Bombs during one of the world wars released it. And I was like, it's just try hard. And I'm just not convinced. So I don't know. The whole aspect of the backstory and the plot, I wasn't on board with.
Sure.
And then one of the other issues I had is they would do some very nice build up to parts that you're expecting to be some of the main, you know, jump out or scary parts throughout the film. You know, a lot of like silence, or you'll see a character looming in the background. But then when the lead into, you know, the scary part, it was kind of lame in my opinion. It was a little bit of a letdown for me. I was expecting more. I wish they would have just, you know, simplified things, go with, you know, virtually, you know, no plot is fine with me, or a basic plot just to get the story rolling. But, you know, the nun character was one of the best parts I thought that came out of The Conjuring 2, and it just kind of felt wasted with this movie.
That's a shame, you know, and I feel like, you know, compared to prior years, this year has been a little light on horror. I was looking at the box office take as far as, like, you know, what came in number one from January till now. And really, you know, there's really only been one movie that's kind of dominated the box office charts that was a horror, and that was A Quiet Place. That had a really, really good run for a couple of weeks. And, you know, audiences will flock to horror. And I think, you know, kind of seeing this $53.5 million is evidence of that. You know, people like to be scared. People, especially with The Conjuring, you know, they've got a universe where people have kind of grown attached to. So that kind of explains a lot of the take. But I definitely feel that... it's been a little weak. So I think that it kind of plays in a little bit to the beefed up box office take of this. And I guess moving forward, I can see it still having a lot of legs. Horrors are typically front loaded, but there's not really a lot of competition. I think there's a movie called Hellfest that's coming out a couple weeks later. That's kind of more like a traditional slasher. Might do some okay stuff, but, you know, nothing compared to The Nun. I think it could make like a pretty good pocket for itself before Halloween comes out, and we're still, like, you know, a month and a half away from that.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's gonna, you know, keep making a ton of money and then lead into, you know, it'll probably open at the perfect time because it'll get its second legs going to October with Halloween, so it'll do very well. But unfortunately, you know, I was hoping for, you know, a better film to tie into, you know, the Conjuring franchise. And I mean, a quick shout out, they did a little bit of an Easter egg at the very end of the movie, which was kind of nice. But that was, you know, one of the more soul high points of it for me.
Cool. Unfortunate, though.
Yeah. All righty. Well, I think let's dive into what we've got coming up this next week. I know at some point we will get into this, Mark, because we are going to do a quick shout out to Vern when he's done his favorite and least favorite movies of the year. He just did a least favorite movies on his last podcast. I think we're going to be a little tight on time, so maybe we'll just stick with what's coming out today, and we'll see if we get to this next week.
Absolutely.
But soon to come, mine and Mark's favorite and least favorite movies of the year so far. But all right, going into the upcoming week, as we mentioned earlier, we've got The Predator come out with its recent scene cut. But I guess I'm kind of torn on this movie. On one side, I'm excited because I love Shane Black. He does great dialogue, phenomenal writer. He's made some, you know, pretty strong movies too. I loved The Nice Guys. I thought that was awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like this movie will be well written and comical. But the trailers so far just aren't giving me much to go on. So I'm a little nervous based on that. But I'm okay with the cast that he has in it. But what are you thinking so far?
I'm kind of echoing what you're talking about. I've seen both trailers. They really kind of just stick out as being fairly generic, which is kind of unfortunate. The cast, though, I am all in on the cast. I don't watch a lot of TV shows, but... from what I've seen from Sterling K. Brown, you know, he's a compelling presence in all the movies I've seen him in. Really good in a movie called Marshall last year. I liked him in that. Olivia Munn, you know, she's a pretty face to look at, but she's not bad either. I think she's kind of underrated in some aspects. But, you know, you've got Keegan-Michael you've got Keegan-Michael Key, you've got Alfie Allen, you've got Thomas Jane, you know, even Jake Busey is in it too. Trevante Rhodes from Moonlight, Boyd Holbrook. So you do have a really, you know, kind of unique, diverse, you know, kind of rising cast in some ways. So I'm sold on the cast. I'm not so much sold on the actual movie. I'm still going to go ahead and take a look. I know you're handling for it for that moment in .com, but you know, everything I've kind of heard is it's fine. It's kind of average. I'm sure we'll get some, I hope we'll get some cool kills. I hope we get a little bit of Easter eggs to the first Predator and second one. I'm sure we will, since Shane Black is directing it.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, fingers crossed, maybe it can surprise a little bit, but there's has been just a lot of, I've heard more negative stuff than positive as far as like reshoots and, you know,
right.
the tones and stuff. So sometimes you've seen the it go in opposite directions, but I am a little disappointed and I am expecting kind of the worst before the best here.
Yeah, I think I'm definitely going to go in with lower expectations. And one of the things that I don't like is that the it's got like the small town rural feel to it, which is similar to the second Alien versus Predator movie, which automatically just puts a bad taste in my mouth. So, yeah, we'll see.
No.
Again, going in with reservations for sure.
Yeah.
Let's see. We got A Simple Favor coming out as well. Have you seen too much on this one?
I have. I've seen the trailer a couple times. To my knowledge, I think they're kind of positioning it as sort of a Gone Girl-esque, you know, whodunit. To my knowledge, it's I want to say Anna Kendrick's in it. So Anna Kendrick,
yeah.
And I'm forgetting one other huge star who's doing it. But
yeah, it's her and Blake Lively are the two stars. And then is Paul Feig directing it?
He is, yeah, he is directing it, and I'm kind of interested on that front because, you know, he's really made his name on a comedy. I know this will have some comedy aspects to it just watching the trailer, but it definitely
right.
seems a lot more dark comedy focused, which is cool with me. My humor usually tends towards being dark and, you know, sarcastic, so I think we'll get that, but it's definitely going to delve completely into, like, that neo-noir thriller-type side of things. So I don't know exactly how it's going to be, but they have interested me enough to want to take a look. I don't think any screeners are happening around me next week, but it'll probably be something where I go and buy a ticket to see on Saturday just to get a vibe. Never read the book. Apparently it just came out last year, so very, very quick turnaround as far as getting the novel onto the screen. We'll see how that translates, but I'm going to go in relatively blind outside of just looking at the trailer once or twice. So we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, it looks like quite the mystery. So hopefully it's got a nice little you know, plot with a few twists mixed in. And it, I mean, always a good sign when a movie's getting made this quickly after the novel's released. I think it means there's a certain draw to it. So yeah, it looks like it's got a unique tone, and fingers crossed that it's a solid one.
Yeah.
And last major one is White Boy Rick. Is that one that you're checking out this week?
If all goes well, I'll probably be checking out tomorrow. I do have a screener for that. So
I've
seen the trailer,
perfect.
You know, more than enough times. I haven't really delved deeply into the machinations of the actual, you know, real life stuff. I might go ahead and tackle it a little bit before I go into the movie tonight. But I'm a little excited for this. They do have some early stuff coming out right now that it seems like it's painting it as fairly average. But, you know, I like Matthew McConaughey. He had the big McConaissance a couple of years ago. Since,
yep.
You know, since winning that Oscar, he hasn't really done a whole bunch that has really stuck in my mind. I'm kind of racking my brain as to what exactly he's done since then. But, you know, he has the chops. He's definitely evolved into being more of a serious guy. So I'm not worried about him. It's got Jennifer Jason Leigh in it. The young kid playing Rick seems like, you know, he might have a really good handle on carrying a lot of the dramatic elements of the film. So, you know, I'm all in. I always kind of like these types of, you know, crime biographies going back to like, I'm getting like Black Mass vibe from it. What was that, 2015, 2016?
Yep.
Johnny Depp, Whitey Bulger. I really, really enjoyed that movie. I know some people had issues with, you know, the pacing and whatnot, but I was all in on that movie. I don't know if we'll have the same type of grittiness that movie had, but, you know, here's the hoping that I'll enjoy it. But yeah, all goes well. Definitely checking out tomorrow.
All right. Awesome. So we'll keep our eyes open for, you throwing the movie review on That Moment In. And, yeah, I'm kind of in the air on this one. I have no doubt the acting's going to be great. McConaughey's taken on what seems like some very strong method acting lately and just getting fully immersed in his roles. So
yeah,
I think he should be excellent and maybe vying for a supporting actor nod. But yeah, I think it's going to come down to how captivating the story is and does it suck in the audience. I think that was one issue with Black Mass, because I thought the acting in Black Mass was phenomenal. I thought everybody did a great job. I'm not sure if the story really pulled the audience in as much as they wanted. So hopefully White Boy Rick does that, and we get a nice little sleeper hit there.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more.
All right, so wrapping things up. So for me this week, you can expect a review of The Predator probably late Thursday, early Friday. And then I'm putting a piece together about who should be replacing, or I guess at least some possibilities for replacing Danny Boyle, since he was removed from Bond 25 due to some creative differences as of late. So I should get that released in the next few days here. And Mark, what can we be expecting from you this week?
Yeah, so I'm actually working on a review for the Wife. It's kind of an interesting movie, whereas I believe it got released in some pockets in 2017, but it's slowly but surely starting to get kind of a release here in 2018 over the last couple weeks. I won't give a ton away, but stars Glenn Close. Essentially, she plays the wife of an author who is getting the award for the Nobel Prize for Literature. So, it's a very kind of talky drama. It's adapted from a novel from a couple years back, really like 14 years ago. But, it really had me gripped, to be honest. Very methodical, very well-paced, surprisingly good direction. I'd say probably a top five career performance from Glenn Close. I know her from Fatal Attraction in 1987. So, she's got a lot of gravitas in a lot of her parts. This is one of them. I don't think it's going to get a whole bunch of release spots across the U.S. But if anyone does get the chance to check it out, you hear the name The Wife and you think it's kind of nondescript, but there's a lot more going on within The Wife. So I'll leave it at that. But working on that, hopefully get it done maybe by tomorrow night, not Tuesday afternoon. And definitely going to tackle White Boy Rick, and hopefully maybe the week after that, try to get to A Simple Favor and get that up at least for next week or something.
All right, well, there we go. Check thatmomentin.com throughout the week for a few updates from a few releases from Mark and myself. And Mark, any parting notes before we go?
No, I think we hit on it a lot. We're kind of coming in on award season. We really haven't had that movie yet to really say, okay, we're here in award season, but I think we're coming up on it pretty quickly. A lot more to get into as we continue to do more and more of these. So you guys just hang tight to this podcast. We'll keep you up to date as much as we can, and keep on reading our work at thatmomentin.com and our respective sites. And that's all I got.
All right. Well, thank you very much, everybody. And that is our latest episode of Cinema Recap. And join us next week for another.